but I didn't realize what I'd done till I heard the sound. Like somebody drowning, screaming underwater. I handed the knife to Dick. I said, "Finish him. You'll feel better." Dick tried, or pretended to. But the man had the strength of 10 men. He was half out of his ropes. His hands were free. Dick panicked. Dick wanted to get the hell out of there. But I wouldn't let him go. The man would have died anyway, I know that. But I couldn't leave him like he was. I told Dick to hold the flashlight. Focus it. Then I aimed the gun. The room just exploded. Went blue. Just blazed up. Jesus. I'll never understand why they didn't hear the noise 20 miles around. Dewey's ears ring with it. A ringing that almost deafens him to the whispery rush of Smith's soft voice. But the voice plunges on, ejecting a fusillade of sounds and images. Hickok hunting the discharged shell. Hurrying, hurrying, and Kenyon's head in a circle of light. The murmur of muffled pleadings, then Hickok again scrambling after a used cartridge. Nancy's room. Nancy listening to boots on hardwood stairs, the creak of the steps as they climbed toward her. Nancy's eyes. Nancy watching the flashlight's shine seek the target. She said, "Oh no. Oh please. No. 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 Don't. Oh please, don't. Please." I gave the gun to Dick. I told him I'd done all I could do. He took aim, and she turned her face to the wall. The dark hall, the assassins hastening toward the final door. Perhaps, having heard all she had, Bonnie welcomed their swift approach. That last shell was a bitch to locate. Dick wiggled under the bed to get it. Then we closed Mrs. Clutter's door and went downstairs to the office. We waited there, like we had when we first came. Looked through the blinds to see if the hired man was poking around, or anybody else who might have heard the gunfire. But it was just the same. Not a sound. Just the wind. And Dick, panting like wolves were after him. Right there, in those few seconds before we ran out to the car and drove away, that's when I decided I'd better shoot Dick. He'd said over and over. He'd drummed it into me. No witnesses. And I thought, he's a witness. I don't know what stopped me. God knows I should have done it. Shot him dead. Got in the car and kept on going till I lost myself in Mexico. A hush. For 10 miles and more, the 3 men ride without speaking. Sorrow and profound fatigue are at the heart of Dewey's silence. It had been his ambition to learn exactly what happened in that house that night. Twice now he'd been told, and the 2 versions were very much alike, the only serious discrepancy being that Hickok attributed all 4 deaths to Smith, while Smith contended that Hickok had killed the 2 women. But the confessions, though they answered questions of how and why, failed to satisfy his sense of meaningful design. The crime was a psychological accident, virtually an impersonal act. The victims might as well have been killed by lightning. Except for one thing. They had experienced prolonged terror. They had suffered. And Dewey could not forget their sufferings. Nonetheless, he found it possible to look at the man beside him without anger, with rather a measure of sympathy. For Perry Smith's life had been no bed of roses, but pitiful, an ugly and lonely progress toward one mirage and then another. Dewey's sympathy, however, was not deep enough to accommodate either forgiveness or mercy. He hoped to see Perry and his partner hanged. Hanged back to back. Dunce asks Smith, "Add it up. How much money did you get from the Clutters?" "Between $40 and $50.